Welcome to the Commonwealth Poetry Podcast,
where we celebrate poetry and the Commonwealth with people from across the Commonwealth.
I'm Giles Brandreth.
And I'm Afra Brandreth.
We're a father and daughter based in London in the UK.
But each week, online or in person, we're visiting a different Commonwealth country. And when we get there, we're going to talk about poetry with someone from that country who cares about poetry, knows about poetry, often writes their own poetry. And they're going to share with us two or three of their favourite poems.
Where are we off to this week, Afra?
Solomon Islands.
Ooh, where are Solomon Islands?
Well, the Solomon Islands are two parallel chains of volcanic islands and small coral atolls in the southwestern Pacific. The country is mainly mountainous and covered in forests, although it does have some extensive plains. Solomon Islands' nearest neighbours are Vanuatu to the southeast and Papua New Guinea to the west. You give us the facts and figures, Dad.
Okay, capital, Honiara. Language, official language is English. However, there are, 63 to 70 distinct languages spoken in the islands, though Pidgin English, is also used by most people as a common language. The region is the Pacific. Population, around 650,000. Area, just over 30,000 square kilometres. Joined the Commonwealth 1978, following independence from Britain.
Now, the Solomon Islands no longer have a High Commission in the UK, but we are lucky enough to be able to speak to the Honorary Consul for the Solomon Islands today. So, off we go.
Well, here at the Commonwealth Poetry Podcast, we're in a state of high excitement today because our virtual tour of the Commonwealth has brought us to the southwestern Pacific and to what I used to call the Solomon Islands, but I now know are called Solomon Islands. I know that because with Afra and me today, we have John Freeman. John, what's your title?
I'm Honorary Consul of Solomon Islands in London.
Before you explain to us why you have this august title, tell us a little bit about Solomon Islands. Where are they? What are they? How long have they been part of the Commonwealth? Give us a flavour.
Solomon Islands are a group of islands with a population of just over 500,000. There are 6 or 8 large islands of the order of 100 and 150 miles long, and 20 or 30, some cases 50 across, with some quite high mountains. The highest is 8,500 feet. Stretched out on a map of Europe, they'd stretch from Paris to Kiev, though most of that area is sea. They are mainly tropical rainforest, although there has been a lot of logging. People live by growing crops, mainly root crops, sweet potatoes, taros and yams, or by fishing. About 92 or 93% of the population are Melanesians. The remainder are Polynesians, who are closely related to the Maori and other Polynesian peoples in the South Pacific, and speak a language which can be understood by them. The Melanesians speak about 70 different languages between them, and that's why Pidgin grew up originally to help communication between the Solomon Islanders and sailors on ships calling in for various products that they wanted, one of those being something called bêche de mer, which was a kind of sea slug much prized in China.
So English is the official language, but most people wouldn't speak in English if you visited Solomon Islands.
People who are educated would speak some English. Anybody who'd ever left their village or been to school or held a formal job would certainly speak Pidgin.
And how come you were there?
I answered an ad in the Times. It wasn't, in fact, for a job in Solomon Islands, but ODA, the Overseas Development Administration, who then ran such things, British Aid, rang me up and said, would I like to come for an interview for a job in the Solomon Islands next Monday? And as I was down London the weekend, not doing anything else on the Monday, I said, all right. And I was interviewed and got the job.
And the job was?
The job was being a resident magistrate in one of the islands called Malaita. And in the end, I liked it so much, I stayed on for 3.5 years doing various other jobs too.
But you were administering justice. Is there much crime in Solomon Islands?
There is not a lot of middle-ranking crime. There were some murders because sometimes in their custom a quarrel would arise as a result of which people were honour-bound to kill someone on the other side.
Oh, dear.
And there were some small assaults and affrays and so on. Not a lot in those days of the robbery, burglary, that kind of crime.
Is there religion? Is there a religion of the Solomon Islands?
90-something percent of the population are Christians. And very serious Christians, too. There are various different denominations. Some islands are all one denomination. Some have several. There are a small number of pagans living mainly in the middle of the bush, mainly on Malaita, and some, I think, on Guadalcanal too.
And the government is what?
The government is a parliamentary system. The Queen is represented by a Governor-General, who's a Solomon Islander, and there is a Prime Minister and a Leader of the Opposition, just as we have here.
So what's the history of Solomon Islands in the Commonwealth? Do you know when they joined the Commonwealth?
Solomon Islands was originally annexed. I don't think that's quite the right word. A protectorate was declared by a colonial civil servant called Woodward in 1890. He was a fairly junior colonial officer at the Western Pacific High Commission in Suva in Fiji. But all his senior officers were home on long leave. And he had a schooner and a small amount of money at his disposal. He was a very keen ornithologist. And he badly wanted to visit Solomon Islands and stop it being despoiled. So he took his schooner and a handful of men and arrived in 1890 and declared a protectorate.
But it's now an independent country within the Commonwealth.
Since 1978, it's been an independent country within the Commonwealth.
And what is it? What is it looking to do in the world? What is the place of Solomon Islands in the world?
That's a difficult one to answer because it's very much its own place. It's not somewhere that is looking for industrial development. There are various commercial opportunities which no doubt could be developed. Its obvious big neighbours are Australia and New Zealand. There is also a good deal of Chinese interest in the country.
Is there much tourism?
Not very much tourism, no.
Well, we're here to talk about poetry. So tell us about the cultural heritage of Solomon Islands. When people go to school, are they introduced to poetry?
I think on the whole, when they go to school, what they would learn as much as anything else would be hymns, because the Christian tradition is really very strong. I remember going to the opening of a new police station when I was acting director of public prosecutions. And the proceedings were much like you'd expect here. The new building was opened by the Minister for Police and Justice, and various people made speeches. But then everybody sang a hymn, Stand up for Jesus. And then refreshments were served.
So that's the sort of heritage, is learning hymns.
Yes, and there's a very strong heritage of singing and dancing. But as far as formal poetry is concerned, this is something which has really come from outside.
And who goes to school? What age do they start? What age do they finish?
Primary school is free, and they would go similar ages to children here. Secondary school is fee-paying, though scholarships are available. And there are secondary schools in each of the provinces and several in the capital.
And would lessons be taught in English, or would it depend on the area that they were in?
From a fairly early stage, they would be in English.
And is that, because we found it's interesting, in a number of Commonwealth countries, the hold of English language, even the Victorian era, 120 years later, still seems to hold sway, and there are still people learning, you know, Keats and Wordsworth and Shelley, and they're being introduced to English letters. Does that sort of thing happen, or is it different?
I think English authors are still on the syllabus there. I do remember when I was dealing with land cases in the Western province, some litigants having for Christian names Shakespeare and Milton. So you can be sure that the missionaries in those parts were very keen on their English literature quite a few years ago, because those were already old men in my day.
So they were taught Shakespeare at school?
They certainly were in those days. How much it comes up now, I'm not too sure.
Is there drama today? I mean, if we went to the capital, is there a theatre where they're putting on plays that we would understand?
Well, there was certainly a theatre in which I once performed.
Ah.
That was an expatriate drama group. And we performed a farce called Pass the Butler. I was that butler. And we started with a dress rehearsal, at which we offered free tickets to the local teachers' training college, as it was then. And then we had three nights for paying customers, who, by the nature of things in those days, were mainly expatriates. And I'm pleased to say we got a lot of laughs, both for the dress rehearsal and for the opening night, but in completely different places.
Now, there are some published poets in Solomon Islands. Are you familiar with any of them? Who have you come across?
Well, the main ones that I've come across are Celestine Coolagoy. And in case anybody's in any doubt about that, he's a man born in 957. And I'm going to read something of his. And then there is Julia McKinney, who was born in 1953. And in 2017, she received the Women of Courage Award from the US Secretary of State for her work championing women's rights and also her poetry.
And is that champion of women's rights, is that reflected in her poetry?
I think it is, to an extent. It's difficult to give a flavour of it, but there are a few lines from the start of her best-known poem, Civilised Girl, which are probably rather ironic, but I will give you: cheap perfume, six-inch heels, skin-tight pants, civilized girl. Well, that's the modern side of Solomon's, as she perhaps ironically put it forward. Pretty much life in the capital. There is a whole other side, which is reflected in some of her other works.
So is this touching on a kind of struggle that is now between the modern world, the Western values encapsulated in those four lines, and the more traditional village life that some of the old guard may feel was a better way of life?
There is such a feeling. I think most people in Solomon Islands would pay more respect than we are used to here to their elders. Mm. And old man is very much a term of respect.
There's hope for us, John.
I think it's got to be encouraging now.
It is. Yes. It's quite encouraging. I think we may be moving out there permanently. Is it a society now where there is equality between men and women?
I think, except in the city, a fairly traditional view is taken of the relations between the sexes. There is a good deal of mutual support between women. I remember trying a rape case in the High Court in Honiara in 1985, and it was an unusual, unpleasant gang rape case. And the courtroom was packed with women and girls who were clearly there to support the complainant.
So which one have you chosen to read us? And tell us, if you can, a little bit more about Celestine Kulagoe.
Celestine Kulagoe, like most of such published poets as there are in Solomon Islands, was educated overseas, in his case, the University of the South Pacific in Suva in Fiji. I think this poem is, in fact, about Suva, the capital of Fiji, but it might just as easily be about Honiara. It's called City Sunset, and it was written in 1975. At six, the sun sets, escorted by puffs of blushing clouds, distributing its last golden wealth to the immediate heaven, while the whole cosmos turns green and blue with envy. The mountains stretching, a huge black cat, motionless on a blue watery carpet. Eyes red, green and white, staring into the evening. The moon, a silent diamond ring in the sky, hangs precariously, while beneath it, like a glittering jewel, cushioned by the blue carpet, the humming city nestles cosily to rest. And anyone who's been in the South Pacific knows that's how it is at sunset. In Solomon Islands, sometimes sunset is at six, sometimes it's at 6:30. There's no more variation than that.
It's wonderfully evocative and beautifully read. No wonder you were the mainstay of the amateur dramatics.
Let's say the fall guy.
That's marvellous, isn't it?
I thought it was beautiful. I could imagine being there. So I've heard that the word one talk, meaning one talk, is a kind of important word describing how language and kinship in the Solomon Islands is brought together. What does that mean for you? Is that something that you're familiar with?
Very much so. That is the derivation of it. Because no language in Solomon Islands is spoken by more than about 30,000 people. But in practice, one talk means a member of somebody's extended family. And that can be a very extended family indeed in our terms. But when somebody says, "Emi one talk blami," you know that they are related closely enough in their terms for it to be significant.
Okay, so they feel if somebody shares the same language with them, then they're from a kind of close community, and that's part of the link and the ties together.
There is that, but family ties are particularly important to them.
So do you, if you were out in Solomon Islands, would you speak pidgin if you were speaking to somebody, or do you communicate always in English?
Oh, yes. My wife and I went for a visit in 2017. And as soon as we got into the taxi at the airport, I started talking pidgin to the taxi driver, who was quite surprised but pleased to find a visitor speaking pidgin.
So you can speak comfortably in pidgin?
Mi savi duim. Imol sem na.
Well, isn't this intriguing? And it is, pidgin is basically, I didn't realise that it was Solomon Islands that it came from. I mean, we've all heard of pidgin English. Are there different versions?
There are different versions of pidgin. The pidgin spoken in Solomon Islands and Papua New Guinea is very similar. Bishlama, which is what they call it in Vanuatu, after the Besht Mer, which I mentioned earlier, is very similar too. There are also pidgins in West Africa and other places around the world. One common feature they share is that a number of basic words are derived from Portuguese, those having been the original discoverers of various distant countries. To take one example, piccanini, which is a normal pidgin word for a child, Portuguese pequenino.
Hmm. Very good. Is there a national anthem?
There is a national anthem. I won't try and sing it for you, but it begins God Save Solomon Islands. And it's somewhere between God Save the Queen and a hymn. This is a poem in French by Richard Belon. And it was translated into hundreds of different languages all around the world as part of a project. It's a very short, rather romantic poem, and this is how it goes. Ton image dans la glace, c'est mon plus beau poème. Mais fais vite, il s'efface, c'est mon dernier je t'aime. And this was the pidgin translation. Fes blanc you l'omero, em brava favorite story blanc me. But you must quick time before him disappear. Em last time blanc me brava loving you. Pidgin has mainly English vocabulary, but Melanesian grammar. And so there's no sort of tenses as we would have them, but one can imply a tense. One could say, me doem something, I do something. Me doem something finish, I did something. By me doem something, I will do something. Oh. And the prepositions are fairly few. There's belong, which takes the place of, and long, which takes the place of pretty much any other preposition in standard English. Verbs with im on the end mean that they are transitive, and that really comes from the way that Victorian sailors pronounced their English. They would say im rather than him, and that's how it got there.
Goodness.
It's so interesting how language evolves and changes and what things stick and what things don't.
Yes, to think in the Solomon Islands in 2022, they're talking like Victorian sailors because that's what they heard. Yes, because I remember the Duke of Edinburgh was described as, was it Imbelong Queen?
It's said that he was known somewhere as Man Blong Mrs. Queen. And also it's said that he's the object of worship in the cargo cult on Tanna, which is in Vanuatu, not Solomon Islands. because on the fairly logical basis, if the Queen was important, her husband must be even more important.
Thank you so much. Good. It's been so interesting to find out more about Solomon Islands.
Yeah, I can't wait to
and
go.
And yet another place added to my to travel list.
Absolutely. But we've got to learn pidgin first.
That's it for this podcast. Our thanks to John Freeman, who chose to read City Sunset by Celestine Kulagoya. La Glace, a poem by Richard Bellon, translated into pidgin by Geraldine Villay, and an excerpt from Civilized Girl by Julie McKinney. Join us next time when we'll be in another Commonwealth country with more poetry from the Commonwealth. The Commonwealth Poetry Podcast is presented by Giles Brandreth and Afra Brandreth and produced by the University of Chester. Our special thanks to them and to the Royal Commonwealth Society.